Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished professional from Bangalore, India, Pooja Goyal. Pooja, welcome to the show.
Thank you for hosting me, Ashutosh. It is a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Pooja is the co-founder and chief operating officer of Avishkar, which is a platform to support children to learn next-gen tech skills like robotics, artificial intelligence, Internet of Things, and coding. She's the recipient of the Women Transforming India Award by the Government of India and the United Nations. Pooja has been named in the top 100 disruptive startups to watch out for worldwide by Analytics India. She invests in women-led companies and supports women founders through CEO Club. And she's one of the founders of Plaksha University. And a lot of us have heard a lot of wonderful things about Plaksha. So Pooja, before we get into talking about Avishkar, tell me a little bit about your own journey.
Sure, Ashutosh. Well, I've been an entrepreneur for a large part of my life. My first startup was in the Bay Area back in 1999 in enterprise software space. That company went under in the downturn of 2001. My last startup was in early years education, a company called IntelliTots, which I bootstrapped with my co-founder over 10 years, and that was acquired 4 years ago by Clay. Currently building Avishkar, which is a platform for children to learn next-gen tech like robotics, AI, and then apply those skills to solve real-world problems. Generation just faces an immense number of problems, and they'll need all the tech skills that they can have to solve them.
Correct.
I also worked with some of the large companies like Palm and Adobe in different parts of the world, largely in the Bay Area. I have two daughters. One of them just flew the nest to pursue college. The younger one is waiting in the wings in 10th. And largely when I reflect about my life journey, Ashutosh, the first decade and a half was a lot about seeking freedom as a girl, as a woman, just freedom to make your own decisions, freedom to live life on your own terms, freedom to travel. And studying hard was the only passport to accomplish that. I grew up in the beautiful city of Jaipur and really no expectations per se, but I knew that learning and studying was the only way. So even though I did not know much about IIT and engineering at that time, as a first generation learner, no one in my family had ever gone to college. Lot of serendipitous events, and I went to IIT to study chemical engineering, which was life changing, and it kind of shifted my world into a different orbit. And then 5 years later, went to INSEAD again to pursue my master's, where again, just interacting with people. There were students from almost 59 countries in our cohort of 600 people. And so it was just a mind-expanding experience.
Oh, wonderful.
So that was first part. The second part of the journey, the last decade, was a lot about finding balance, two kids, two careers, two sets of parents, just a lot of balls in the air, and between my husband and I just trying to keep them juggling. And I think at this stage of life, it is about relevance through contribution in whatever way I can.
How wonderful. And what an amazing journey you've had. Thank you for sharing it with me. So Pooja, let's talk about Avishkar. You told me a little bit about how you support children, but tell me a little bit more about your motivation to start it.
Right. So Ashutosh, education is that one industry or sector where the consumer has moved on. Children learn in very different ways. They have, you know, if today you ask a child a math problem, can't get it, the first thing they'll do is go to YouTube or Google, or they'll have some Reddit communities where they can go and find out the solution and even find answers there. But our education system has lagged behind significantly. So, and the consumer is not at the heart of the system.
Correct.
Even as the chat, like what when ChatGPT came, some of the first reactions from schools across the world was to ban it in schools. Where it's a step change in the way children will use it, students will use it, and learning will happen in
real life. Correct.
So that's the big problem, that the consumer, the child, is not at the center of this big behemoth system, which has its tentacles in our socioeconomic system. And therefore, we are not just doing justice to the generation of students. And that's, you know, one, and it's a big problem. So there is this one small part of it that we are trying to tackle, which is that children need to learn technologies, have the vocabulary for technology, and know that they can use it as a big lever to solve problems.
Correct.
And children, you know, the kind of exposure they have, we couldn't even imagine when we were growing up. Our source of knowledge is either, you know, books or library or teachers or our dads, right? Now students, they have access to immense information. So our goal is for all children to have the basics of computational thinking.
How
can you take a problem and begin to think about it in a systematic manner? Second is mechanical design. How do you just use your hands, use not just your brain, but and just not being listening more, but actually apply it and build it. And the third part of it is, you know, design thinking, where this generation of kids has to make so many decisions on a regular basis. So again, use these projects as tools to help them learn design thinking. Whatever the problem, you can approach it. So those are kind of the three themes that we carry across, and use technology as a lever. So we have, and when I say platform, what I mean is we have hardware. So we have DIY kits. We have software online where children can come and code. And then a community where they can showcase what they have. And, you know, partnerships with companies like Intel, organizations like Atal Innovation Mission, Amazon, children get to showcase all their skills out there. So I'll just give you one example, Ashutosh. One of the kids, a 12-year-old kid, at the time of lockdown, her grandmother had COVID, so she was alone. This kid used an Avishkar kit to build a humanoid robot that could actually carry medicines to her grandmom. And play a little bit of music and would send a note along with the medicines and the food for her. So, you know, when you give children the tools, the environment, and some of the space to explore, come up with some magical stuff.
Amazing. What a great response. Thank you. In fact, when you were talking to me about ChatGPT, I remember talking to someone else and saying, why are schools banning it? Because I remember when I finished my college from the old traditional Delhi system and went to do my MBA, and there was something called an open book exam.
Yes.
And I said, we were so flabbergasted. How could we have all the books in front of us and then give an exam? But ChatGPT will change the way we will think. Awesome. But moving on, you know, when you talk about empowering children and you work a lot with children, how are the children reacting to getting all these tools, and they have such young, fertile minds? How are they reacting to all the empowering that you're doing with all this technology?
So Ashutosh, I would say there also, there is a bell curve. You know, there are some children who take to it like fish to water.
Correct.
20-30% of the kids, you give them a box, you give them some tool, they will open it up, they will tinker with it, put it together, if it doesn't work, they'll quickly go to YouTube, search. If they don't get it, they'll go into the community, ask a question, I'm getting stuck with this. Is this a problem with the motor? Or, you know, I should think about it differently. And they'll get a solution and get it running.
Wow.
There are some, like 30-40% would be students who will need a lot of, a little bit of hand-holding.
Mm-hmm.
They will open up the box and will get a little intimidated by it. How do I go about it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's largely older kids. Mm-hmm. The younger kids are very comfortable with opening up box and starting to learn on their own.
Mm-hmm.
The older kids, maybe because they're used to being given instructions on what to do.
Correct.
They will say, okay, now what?
Mm-hmm.
And they might need the support of a coach, or a teacher in a robotics lab, who will kind of say, okay, now you need to do this. And take them to a certain point and then say, okay, now explore. So some children might need a little bit more hand-holding. But this is something that is needed for all the children to be able to think outside the box. And I think students, our education system is designed to get them to think within the, this is a box.
Yeah.
Under this, you can do what you want. But some children naturally revolt against it. And those are the ones who thrive with it, and they will build different things. They will access other things from different places. And some children need a little bit of hand-holding to kind of say, it's okay. It's okay to not do it the way the manual says, or the instruction book says, do it your own way.
Interesting. And when you now talk about this from the perspective of the parents, you know, you are an Indian parent, I'm an Indian parent, and parents differ across our country. Yeah. But one underlying theme seems to be first in class, become a doctor, lawyer, engineer. I mean, I thought that was there only in the 70s when I was growing up, but it seems to be the case even today. And if you're very bright, become an IAS. I'd love to get your perspective on how are parents reacting to these absolutely incredible opportunities that children are being given now.
Yeah. Ashutosh, there is confusion in the mind of the parents and a little bit of paranoia as well. So while, you know, in our time, there was the insecurity that you know, they wanted to see the children successful. That's why becoming a doctor, engineer was the way to become successful. Now, parents know there are many different ways to become successful, but it's hard to let go of that paranoia that this is the tried and tested road. What if my child goes in this direction and is not?
Correct.
So, I think parents are also confused and they need, so they do want to see their children explore. A lot of parents will come to us and say, Pooja, I've heard about artificial intelligence and I know children are doing it and, you know, cryptocurrency and blockchain, but I don't know what to do about it and whether I should even introduce my child to it. What is the best way? Should I, you know, I see a lot of children playing Roblox and Minecraft. Should I actually encourage my child to go and play that in order for her to learn coding or programming? So parents are very confused as well. And, you know, especially this 30% bell curve I was talking about, 30-40%, the parents know that they come to us and say, look, I want my child to learn, but I don't know how to get started. And I don't want to buy a 5,000 rupee kit and you know, she might not use it. So can you do something like a tuition? So tuition is the thing.
Yes.
There's a teacher who will work with the child to say, okay, now you do this, now you do that. So I think it's a time of great disruption as far as education, future of work, learning is concerned. And both the parents, educators, all three, and children are dealing with that. In cases, Ashutosh, where I see where parents are not able to adjust or be flexible in their thinking and are asserting too much, It's becoming a big problem with mental health, with pressures that children are facing, which they are not able to fulfill their parents' expectations. Or their lives have become so regimented that when they go to college, they are not able to take care of even the basic stuff, like they can write code, but then they can't take care of basic stuff like doing their own laundry or managing So I think parents also are looking for some level of guidance in terms of how they should navigate and work hand in hand with the learning institutions to really work with children and provide them a path for growth and learning.
Amazing, amazing. And one other question, and then I come to the CEO Club. How are schools and the educators reacting to these amazing opportunities? Because I was talking to someone else, and a lot of schools are still not being able to come out that they've got a computer class.
Right. So, Ashutosh, there are some exciting stuff happening in the ecosystem. The good news is government is taking this whole space of skilling, reskilling, learning tech very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So about a few years ago, there was this whole scheme around Atal Tinkering Labs. Where now it started with, like, they were supposed to set up 500 labs. Mm-hmm. And now in just a period of, I think, 5 years, almost 10,000 labs across the country have been set up.
Wow.
They are looking at increasing that number to almost 50,000. So there is immense push. It's not without its challenges. 20-30% of the labs are not being used. Administrators are not there. Teacher capacity is a big problem. But at least now students have access to hardware. So the reason when we talk about it, why India and Indians are great at software but not other kinds of things, is software only needs one computer and a terminal, and you are up and running. When it comes to hardware and building solutions, you need equipment. Okay. And it's very expensive.
Yeah.
And students and parents can't afford it. So the infrastructure is needed. And the good news is that the government is doing its work to kind of establish that infrastructure. We have a long way to go in terms of building teacher capacity, creating the mindset. But at Avishkar itself, Ashutosh, we've set up almost 2,000 robotic labs across India. We just keep seeing in some outstanding projects around whether it is managing plastic, microplastics, empowering the differently abled, smart cities. And these are 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, and they're able to, and these are sitting in tier 4 cities where names we haven't heard of, Shimoga and, in Jammu. And that's only because some level, at least the start has been made in terms of the infrastructure. Then second part of it is there are enough now players in the market as well, players like Avishkar and organizations like Intel, Amazon, Google. They're all trying to do their bit in terms of making sure that young students have opportunities to learn some of these technologies. So while a long way to go, Ashutosh, we are getting there. That's like, action is happening on the ground. It's a complex problem. Multiple facets we need to fix. You need infrastructure, you need teacher capacity, you need pedagogy, curriculum, you need boards to start. But work has started on it, and I'm feeling pretty optimistic with NEP 2020, which is the National Education Policy. A lot of the thrust has been on upskilling, coding becoming mandatory from 6th grade. So I think we'll see change happening.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. And you know, I think I've always admired, even though you and I are both Indians, but the indomitable Indian spirit of all our young people, you know, give them the opportunity, then they'll leapfrog not one, but maybe two generations, you know.
Exactly.
So that's fantastic. Thank you for what you're doing. Pooja, let's now move to the CEO Club. And yeah. I'm assuming CEO stands for Entrepreneurs Organization. Is that right? Or
yes, that's right.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about the CEO Club.
Yeah. So, Ashton, as I was saying, early part of my career, it was a lot about blinders on, trying to get to a stage where you have some freedom to do things. And for a very long time, in a lot of the situations, I was the only woman in the room. You always thought that, look, the world is meritocratic and you can, you know, you can solve most problems by just working harder and smarter. And there is no one out there who's discriminating against you. And so you work hard, you work smart, you'll get there.
Blinkers.
In the last 15 years, as my daughters have started to grow up, I've seen the career trajectories of a lot of my friends made very life decisions, whether it is, you know, becoming a stay-at-home mom to becoming, to not getting married and really pushing the pedal on the career to becoming an entrepreneur and different parts of the world.
Correct.
I feel there are some challenges that consistently women face. So at IntelliTots, when I was running IntelliTots, there were a lot of young mothers, professional mothers, who had decided to be at home with their children. And there was a level of frustration, not fulfilling their potential. Whereas when I work with, some of my friends who've been great at their careers, they, you see that guilt that I'm not spending time with my kids, I'm not done justice to my kids. So it's there are some themes that started to emerge. And at now this stage of my career, I felt like if we don't speak up, speaks up. You know, when I start to look at some of the data, some of the evidence, what is clear, there are some systemic issues in our ecosystem.
Yep.
So if you look at entrepreneurship as a whole, across the world, only 2.3% of the VC funding goes to women-led companies. If you look at just India, only 14% women-owned enterprises.
Correct.
At a broad level, if you look at the female labor force participation in India, we are below Pakistan and Egypt.
Yep.
And the worst part is that it's going down. Now, I don't have all the information or the data to say, is it because their contributions are not being captured at a GDP level? Is it because, you know, women are dropping out? So I have this kind of, right now, some anecdotal evidence where I see a lot of, you know, when you look at women in STEM graduating, they are, those numbers are very high, almost 25%, 50%. So at an education level, a lot of STEM graduates. But workforce participation and scientists, women scientists, that drops down to
14-15%.
Wow. So there is this big gap. And I don't have all the answers, but it's just the frustration, the appalling, you know, you get appalled. Oh, 50% of the population in so many startups and only 50%, right? What, something's not right. And at first, we know some smart women entrepreneurs. So it's just this mix of anger and frustration. And you say, okay, what can you do anything?
Yes.
Speak up about it.
Absolutely.
And second, you know, at the time of lockdown, I just began to, again, I was talking to a lot of people, women founders, women professionals, and I felt like it was disproportionately impacting women, lockdown in strange ways, and they were dropping out of workforce. So I, on a whim, I sent out a tweet and a LinkedIn post saying, I will make myself available on Sunday mornings for 2 to 3 hours for any woman entrepreneur who wants to discuss their business plan or their career. And I must have heard from almost 250 women.
Wow.
So I started to schedule it over a period of time, became close to a lot of the women, fellow women entrepreneurs, professionals. I couldn't do all of it. So a lot of my friends said, oh, we are happy to spend some time. And so it happened organically. It is still happening organically. And now, so essentially what came out was there are challenges at one, just ambition level as well. A lot of women starting up but saying, we are good with this only. I don't think we can go raise capital, grow at that pace. We'll just do it like that. Second is around skill gap. So, you know, you see that even the ambition is there, then sometimes, you know, the financial statements, knowing P&L, knowing MIS, knowing product market, just those basic skills.
Yeah.
The third is around just networks. If the women have kind of dropped out of workforce, they lose the networks that a lot of male founders have. You know, anything, like I need an agency, I need a lawyer to draft and look at the contract. A lot of women don't have that ecosystem. And then last was funding capital. So again, multiple studies showing that there are inherent biases and as venture capitalists evaluate pitches, right? So I started to invest. I've invested in a few women-led startups and supporting them. So it's an organic kind of effort, a very small one, to support fellow women entrepreneurs and figure out how can we systematically make a dent in this.
How wonderful. How wonderful. Would you have time for only one more question? And I can keep talking to you for a long time because you have so much to offer our viewers and listeners. But my last question is for the thousands of people who will listen to our conversation. Based on your own amazing journey and as one of the well-known, respected women entrepreneurs, what would you say are three lessons you would want to give to a lot of women and maybe a lot of young entrepreneurs, men or women, in our country and around the world?
Sure, Ashutosh. So one, I would say, is you always build your way forward. You don't think your way forward. And you need an entrepreneur, right?
Like,
when you're starting out, you can do as much pros and cons and analysis on paper and talk to people, but there's only so much clarity you will get. It's only after you take the plunge and you start to build it that, you know, things become clear and things actually begin to fall in place.
Correct.
When you are starting out, it might seem like a mammoth jam. You say you never get there. But as you start to build your way forward, things begin to fall in place. And it's like, you know, when you're climbing a staircase, you can't see the top of the 18th floor then. You have to get first to second floor, and then you have another set of options, and then you get to the next floor and you have another set of options. So I would say that's one. It's always very nerve-wracking to start something. Also, seeing so much going on around Shark Tank, you know, that entrepreneur has been so successful, raising capital. It can seem overwhelming, but I would say build your way forward.
Correct.
Second is striking a balance between consistency and exploration. Earlier on in my career, my general sense was to start a lot of things. Whatever I got excited about, start doing it. Gradually, I learned that there is a benefit to staying consistent. And there is the whole power of compounding.
Yeah.
you do small changes, improve, you stick to a path, things begin to happen.
Correct.
So, and there are lots of books like Atomic Habits and Tiny Habits. It's all about the power of consistency.
Mm.
But you have to strike a balance between that and exploration.
Right.
So, you know, you achieve a local optima through this consistency, but then there is a time when you need to explore further and say, okay, is there any other peaks around there?
Absolutely.
You know, local optima.
Mm.
So you need to kind of constantly balance that. And then last, as a woman entrepreneur and possibly myself, I'd say I used to be very conscious in asking for help, in kind of reaching out. But I would say not every closed door is locked.
Mm.
If you don't ask, the answer is always no.
Yeah.
And my last now so many years, I feel like most people are willing to help and support.
Correct.
Like everybody you reach out to, nobody will say no. If you say, I want to discuss this or ask advice, you find such amazing people who are willing to give out their time, resources, even money.
Correct.
Even the cause and believe in you.
Yeah.
So I would say, go ask, don't hold back. If you don't ask, the answer will always be.
Absolutely. Well said. Well said. And on that note, Pooja, and your three amazing lessons, and I love each one of them. Build your way forward, not think it forward. Second, you said strike a balance between consistency and exploration, and such a powerful comment between, you know, consistency and exploration. And third one, which is so simple, and yet most people don't take it up, is ask for help. Not every door is closed, not every closed door is locked. It's again such an amazing comment. Thank you for speaking to me about your own amazing journey as one of the well-respected, well-known women entrepreneurs of our country. Thank you for telling me about Avishkar and all the great work that you're doing for so many children, and more power to you, because it's all we've learned from your own background of being IIT, how much education has done for young students out of IIT and how they've actually changed our country. Thank you also for speaking to me about the CEO Club. Thank you again for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Thanks, Atan. Ashutosh, it was just wonderful speaking with you. And anyway, your entrepreneurial journey has been a source of inspiration.
Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast. A platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.